Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
I'm delighted to say we are joined once again by Esther McCarthy and Jean Smullen. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
You're both well and coming in loud and clear. So it's Spain we're going to today, Jean.
We are, yeah. Wines from Spain are running Spanish Wine Week next week. Unfortunately for them, they had plans for lots and lots of events, and an awful lot of them have been cancelled, obviously because of the level 3 restrictions. But there's lots of off licenses with great offers, and then there's loads of online stuff happening. So I'll talk a little bit about that later on.
Right, okay. And the two Spanish wines, are they from different parts of Spain?
Yeah, we've got Campo Viejo. Remember, oh gosh, seven years ago, 2013, yeah. We flew over and did a live.
My liver just hopped in my chest there, or up to my chest, I should say, in the memory of that.
Well, they actually have, Campo Viejo have a brand new white wine from the Dio Reyes Baxas, not from Rioja. And we're going to be looking at that, and it's absolutely super. And then one of my favorite regions in Spain, Ribera del Duero. I mean, it's a place I've been to so many times. I absolutely adore it. So I had to feature a wine from that. If we're going to be featuring Spanish wine, this is one of my favorite regions. So we've got a fabulous wine available from O'Brien's that comes from Ribera del Duero, which is in Castilla y León.
Right. What was the name of that row again? That kind of elephant's row.
Elephant's row?
Yeah, we went there. When we were there on that OB, there was a row, and you went there and each place would give you one little kind of hors d'oeuvre.
That was in Logroño. We went on the Trappist Trail.
Yes.
And we had onions and all sorts of tomatoes, which really tasted like tomatoes and were absolutely gorgeous.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Fishy things and all sorts of, they were tapas plates. And then we had a glass of wine in each bar. Yeah. I vaguely remember that night.
I think that's why they called it the Elephant's Row, because you were elephants by the time you got to the top of it.
That would explain it.
Yeah. $150 a shot for a glass of wine and a piece of tapas. Absolutely gorgeous.
It was fabulous.
Yeah,
it
was absolutely really was. Yeah, as far as I remember it anyway. Esther, so the two movies today, I must say I haven't heard of about them.
I hadn't either until the latest lockdown, to be honest with you. So what has happened is, like, it was unexpected, I suppose, this week. Dublin cinemas were already closed, of course, for a couple of weeks. But the newest measures this week means the poor cinema owners had to close their doors again. And a lot of very high profile Irish films are really struggling as a result, because I thought over the next couple of weeks, including today, actually, that we'd be doing a lot of some of the most anticipated and high quality Irish films of the year, I have to say. A lot of them were scheduled to be released in October. Some of them, Sean, were rescheduled from the last lockdown. So you really have to feel sorry for Irish independent filmmakers. So today I should have been talking about Pat Collins' beautiful documentary, his follow-up to Song of Granite on Henry Glassy, called Fieldwork. Next week we should have been talking about Herself, a brilliant Irish drama about a woman who builds her own home to try and escape with her young family from an abusive relationship. And the following week, we should have been talking about the new Phil Lynott documentary, which is one of the most anticipated films of the year. But all is utterly changed now. And it's a really hard time for cinema owners and for independent Irish distributors. And I would just say my heart goes out to them. And when the doors are open again, we'll be talking about all those movies, I'm sure.
Yeah. And and on that point, though, I saw some reports that the delay again of the James Bond film was basically like a knife in the neck to Cineworld.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's unfair to blame one film, I suppose, but I think it was probably the final straw for a lot of cinema owners, having seen title after title after title, be kicked forward to next year. And even overnight last night, we have another one now. Pixar's new movie Soul, which was due to be the big Christmas release in cinemas, is now going to Disney Plus. It's having a digital launch. So that's another one gone for them. So it's a kind of, death by a thousand cuts for film owners. And the Irish cavalry were coming. They were coming over the hill with a very strong autumn offering of films. And then this awful disease kind of reared its head again, and the numbers just went too far north to keep it going. But hopefully in late October we'll be talking about all those movies.
Well, we'd hope so. Anyway, today's movies.
Yes, well, that was a very long way of not answering what today's film was. Sorry about that. So I went digital and I went to look and see what's strong in the streaming front. And we have two quite high profile streamers this week, actually. One called My Zoe, which is the latest film directed by Julie Delpy. Of course, Julie would be kind of, you know, quite a big movie star in her own right, but she has a big directorial career as well. And several years ago, actually, if you want a really light and daft comedy, and who doesn't in these times, she made a film called 2 Days in Paris, and it's really funny. It's about a Parisian. It's kind of a Meet the Parents, where a Parisian woman brings her American husband home to Paris for the weekend, and he finds out how crazy she actually is and how screwball her family are. It's great fun. But she's directing here again. And this is, you know, don't watch the trailer for this one, because there's a reveal in the trailer for this that comes an hour into the film.
Oh,
and
God.
I couldn't quite believe it when I saw it. It might be the worst example ever I've seen of a trailer actually being a synopsis instead of a teaser, you know. So I would say if you don't want major spoilers, do not watch the trailer for this one. But it's a drama, a family drama about a woman who has a young daughter and who has a lot of trouble with the ex-husband, actually, who's played by Richard Armitage. And they think they have trouble, I suppose, and then trouble really rears its head for the two of them.
Right, okay. And then My Zoe.
That was My Zoe, actually. And
Sorry.
No, that's all right. And the other film we have this week is Eternal Beauty, another leading lady going indie, Sally Hawkins here. And this is kind of barmy. And again, I'm not sure how much I should reveal about it, but Sally Hawkins is very good as a young woman who is kind of, she has schizophrenia. She's exhausted from trying to live with this illness all of her life, physically and mentally. And she has real family trouble as well. And it's actually a lot funnier than it sounds, I have to say. There's quite a biting script in this. There's plenty of black humour and put downs, and it's kind of an interesting one as well.
Right, okay, that's I'm looking forward to hearing all that. Just one thing though, to remind you of now, it's not on our show, but it's tomorrow that Simon Tierney's, the second part in Simon Tierney's Race for the White House is on tomorrow night at 7 p.m. He'll have Catherine Zappone on with him. They'll be reviewing the vice presidential debate, also looking at the battleground state of Florida. Now, you can subscribe to the podcast series now on the News Talk app, or tune in tomorrow night at 7 p.m. On News Talk. Our hashtag, by the way, is procrastinating movies. Catch me if you can be arsed, being one example of that. Emer in Lucan says, I was in the Basque Country a few years back and had so much delicious wine. Of course, being an idiot, I didn't take note of any names. Would Jean be able to recommend any good Basque wines that are available in Ireland?
Yeah, the region, Rioja Taxoli is the name, is the sort of the Basque wine region. It's not actually, those are the sort of, that's the name of the wines from that particular part of Spain. You also have, you know, there's French Basque, but what I know better is the Spanish Basque regions. You know, there's a little bit of those wines here, not that much. But, you know, if you go into a good off license and ask them for them, they should have them.
Right. And Taxley has that kind of funny spelling.
Yeah, don't even ask me to spell it. Jeez, I can't even spell my own name half the time, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, just say Taxley, right? Don't ask for spelling.
Steve says, I have a big block of Cashel Blue and a hankering for white wine. I used to like cheese and red wine. Is there a white wine that would work with the blue?
Oh, sweetie. Oh, you have to have a sweet wine, right? Mm. That the greatest match made in heaven is Cashel Blue, and I know the grubs very well. Sarah's a great pal of mine, and her husband Sergio. And what I would say is, I'm a great fan of Austrian wine. And actually, even through the whole kind of lockdown global crisis, I got some information about Austrian wines recently, and they've been selling very well, you know, even though they mainly are available in restaurants. A lot of people have been buying them in off licenses. But what you want is an you know, a sweet wine from Austria. And one of the best producers is, he sadly died a few years ago, Alois Cracker. His son runs the business now. And you'll get those in Mitchell and Sons. And you can buy them online as well. If you go for his Riesling, one of his sweet Rieslings, now they don't come cheap, but I'll tell you, if you want to treat yourself on over the weekend with a big lump of Cashel blue cheese and one of Cracker's Rieslings, oh God, you'll just die and go to heaven. That's all I can say.
Right, okay, you're totally selling that. It must be said. Let's move on to our first wine of the day then.
Okay,
Jane, tell us.
This is their fifth annual Spanish Wine Week, and a lot of the NOFLA, a lot of the independent off licenses, will be running special offers in places like the Wine House, Whelehan Wines, James Nicholson Wines, O'Brien's. You know, have a look around. They're all going to be taking part, but what they actually have is there's some online tastings. For example, there's Wine Online are running the Great Rioja tasting with John Wilson. That's on October 16th. Michelle of the Nude Wine Company, great name, she's doing a Spanish tasting. Sevi, who's this wonderful Turkish winemaker who lives in Galway now, she runs a company called A Wine Idea. She's going to be doing a number of Spanish wine tastings. Now, all of those are making a nominal charge. You can go to my website, jeansmullen.com, and the link to where you can book them is there. Now, there is a small charge for those ones, but they also have a number of webinars, which are all just, you know, anybody who wants to learn more about Spanish wine. For example, Harriet Tindall, who's a master of wine, Supergirl, she's doing a talk on October 13th called The Progress of Tradition. Andreas Kubak, who's a master of wine, and Sevi together are doing a journey through Spanish wines on October 14. There's another fellow, Jonas Toffup, what a name, he's a master of wine. He's doing The Crunchy Wines of Galicia on October 15th. And then Almunda Alberca, it sounds Spanish, she's doing a talk called Four Regions, One Grape. And the grape, of course, is Tempranillo. And that's on the 17th. As I said, all the information is on jeansmullen.com. Anybody who's interested in learning more about Spanish wines, you know, sign up, join in. It's worth doing. It's always great fun. And, you know, support Spain, because they really, you know, they put so much work into it. Unfortunately, because of the moving to level 3, it all kind of went pear-shaped for them.
Of course.
Anyway, that's the ad over, right? Now we're going to go for our Campo Viejo Albarino. Now, interestingly enough, back in 1972, right, Rioja, as we know, because we were there, is very warm. It's a very warm region. It's very dry, desert-like, you know, it's an arid part of Spain. So white wines, it's not really a region that you go to for white wines. And traditionally, Rioja whites were made in what we used to politely call in the wine trade oxidative style. In other words, tasted a bit like sherry. Now, when I started working in the wine trade about 30 years ago, I actually liked those oxidative wine styles. I thought they were fabulous, right? But to be honest with you, they weren't very commercial, and they, you know, they weren't easy to sell, right? But back in the 70s, one of the Rioja houses, Marquis de Riscal, realized, look, we're never going to be able to sell these white wines because nobody's going to drink them, because they just, you know, the locals like this style, but on an international market, this isn't going to fly. So they decided they would look around for a region where they could produce cool climate wines. And they went north to Castilla y León, and they went to the region of Rueda. And they started planting Sauvignon Blanc there, and they started using the indigenous white grape Verdejo, which is now, as you know, one of the most fashionable. It's one of the go-to grapes from Spain. And Marquis de Riscal were the first people to do that. And they changed the face of Rioja white. And white, even though they were Rioja houses, they weren't actually from the region of Rioja. They were mainly from Rueda. So most what people now associate as being Rioja whites are in fact from Rueda. Now, Campo Viejo, who's, you know, they're a big brand. They're the 11th most popular brand on the Irish market. They're very, very big. Everybody loves Campo Viejo. It has a very big presence on this market. They're best known for their red wines, their Crianza, the Reserva, and the Gran Reserva. But they've now decided, well, you know, we need to start looking at a white wine. So they haven't gone to Rueda. They've gone even further north. They've gone over to the northwest, to the region of Galicia, to Atlantic Spain. And they're making their white from the grape, which is, you know, the new Sauvignon Blanc, Albarino. So this is the 2018 Campo Viejo Albarino. It's brand new on the market. It's initially going to be available in Super Value, and then other retailers, Dunnes, Tesco, the other supermarkets will take it from 2021. It's retailing at €16. And I mean, it's absolutely lovely. Now, what surprises me about this when I tasted it is that it's actually quite full bodied in that it's not a lean, mean Albarino. It's actually got tons of kind of aromatic peachy fruit on the nose. And then when you try it, it's actually in the mouth. You've got this quite full bodied, almost spiciness coming through. You're getting your citrus fruit, but there's a very big weight of fruit. So it's not what I would call an atypical Albarino, but this is a wine style that's going to fly. People are going to love this. This is going to start walking off the shelves. And as happens, it'll go on offer from time to time and it'll be at a reduced price. You probably get it €12 or €13 every so often. This, I think, is going to be one of the next big wines that people are going to say, oh, I love the Campo Viejo Albarino. I'm delighted that to be able to try it here for the first time on the show. A super wine, and keep an eye out for it. It'll be initially in Super Value, but then you'll be able to, the availability will be much more broad next year.
Somebody's already texted in to say, I don't like cheese and I don't drink wine, but I'm now on my way to buy some Cashel Blue and some sweet Austrian Riesling after that description. That was the previous description that Jean gave. Craig says he has a bottle of Domaine de Mimosas, Lalande Pomerol 2011. Is this a good wine or should I drink it from a shoe?
No, that is the Lalande Pomerol. Yeah. That's pretty good wine. Yes, don't drink it from a shoe. Get a decent wine glass and enjoy it.
Or a glass slipper, Craig. That might be nice. Esther, what movie would you like to do first?
Let's do Julie Delpy, I think, and My Zoe.
Our hashtag today is procrastinating movies, touching the avoid, or Pro Rogue One. That's very clever, I think. Right, Esther and Jean are still with us. Esther, we're going to not play a clip of My Zoe because, unfortunately, there's a massive spoiler in the trailer for it, which we were going to play. So set the scene for us then, Esther.
Are you afraid to play it in case the spoiler's in it and I give out to you?
Oh, no, we actually know because when you said it then and during the break... Aidan told me about it. And yes, it's pretty obvious what the spoiler is, I think.
Fair play. Okay. And it's just like, I don't know why they do that and why they don't have more faith, film producers in their audience, because like it's a massive moral quandary, I suppose, at the centre of the film, but it doesn't get revealed until well over an hour into the movie, actually. I was looking at the timer as I was watching it going, did they really put that in the trailer? So, you know, I let's just say this is very much a family-centred drama with sci-fi elements to it. And quite a mad premise, actually, that maybe only independent and slightly arty filmmakers could get away with. So the right woman here for the job is Julie Delpy. She's playing a French character, Isabel, but this is set in Berlin, and she's a scientist. And very early on, she says... it's a line that really resonated, actually. I feel like I'm missing half a life. And she says that to her new partner. And the reason she is stuck in limbo and feels stuck in limbo is that she's a young daughter named Zoe, who's about maybe 7, very intelligent, very interested in physics and stuff like that. So is always asking her mom mad science questions. But she's in a custody battle to keep her daughter with a very controlling ex-husband, played by Richard Armitage, who's very good here as well. And she has a very difficult and testy relationship with him. He's constantly saying that, no, you can't take her. It's my time. It's on my hour. And he's just kind of won't budge on stuff, even though she's looking for a new job. She's moved to Berlin to make a new life for herself because he's based there. Mm-hmm. And she... it's just, you know, there's a lot of upheaval in her life as she's trying to settle into a new city. And she... wants them to cut her some slack, I suppose, really. So that's interesting, first of all. But then their relationship becomes really more difficult when he starts to imply, and I suppose this is where sci-fi elements start to come into it. It kind of becomes a little bit mysterious. That cuts and scrapes usually happen on her watch, and that her daughter is having a lot of nightmares about the physics type stuff that they discuss. And physics type stuff is the best description you're going to get from me of it all, I'm afraid.
All right.
The best I can do on that front. But things get a whole lot worse because Zoe mysteriously and very suddenly becomes gravely ill with what is an apparent brain injury. And as her daughter is hospitalised and becomes very, very seriously ill, her mother and father, I suppose, in their own conflict, are left with some extremely difficult life choices. I would say towards the end, it takes slightly, you'd have to kind of really go with this one. Some of the story elements towards late in the film are a bit preposterous. But it's a very interesting film, I think, about what you're willing to do to not have to say goodbye to your child. And I think that's very well played here. And she kind of anchors it all with her performance as well. And she's director as well here, as I say. I'm a big Julie Delpy fan, to be honest. I kind of probably give this an extra star because she's in it and she made it. But you're still in kind of 3 to 4 star territory. Some people will just go here in the final half hour. And I get it. I really get it. But as a drama, I thought this had a lot going on. As I said, star of my favourite trilogy of all time as well, the Before Sunrise movies, the Richard Linklater films with Ethan Hawke. I just love those films. She's doing a good job here, I think. And,
okay. The physics stuff, is it kind of, are we into interstellar kind of territory of what the hell is going on?
I think it wants to be Arrival, this one. I kept watching it and thinking of Arrival, and that, you know, that brilliant character and her work in science and the fact that she lost her daughter as well. It kind of reminded me of that, but just doesn't fall as well together or as brilliantly together as Arrival did, or nowhere near it, actually, I have to say. But as a family drama, it's well acted and well crafted, you know.
Right, okay. So if the physics stuff was actually not in there at all, it would still work as a movie.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. I can't say any more about that.
Well, then don't then. You don't have to at all. Right, okay,
probably,
then.
I'm paying a bit too much respect to it, to be honest. Some people just go, oh, for God's sake.
Yeah. Where could people watch this?
Now, I'm glad you asked that because I had a search on our go-to website to see where it was available, justwatch.ie or .com. And if you're searching under that for titles, be sure and search under Ireland. Don't find to your annoyance that something's on Amazon Prime in America, but not here, having searched for it. But here, listen to this, the price difference on this, because Just Watch, as you know, does a price search as well as a title search. You can rent this for as little as $3.99 tonight or as much as $13.99.
Isn't that mad?
With about 6 price variations in between. So I would say to people now, if you're back streaming more movies in general or because the cinemas are closed, definitely use a price comparison site, because I've noticed 2 or 3 euro in the difference before, but that's a tenner, like, right there, depending on what platform you use.
Right. Well, there you go. Not just movie reviews, but shopping around tips as well. Esther and Jean are still with us. We've already talked about one movie, My Zoe, and talked about one lovely wine in Spain, talked about, because, you know, the both of them are remote now because of level 3. So I'm just sitting here having a cup of tea, to be honest with you. The awfully nice man wants to know, as someone with an unparalleled knowledge of movies, Esther, I can tell you that unfortunately one company makes the movie while another one sells it with a trailer. They pretty much don't give a crap about the viewers. They just want you through the door. Would that be the case? I would have thought that the movie company would say you can't put that in the trailer.
I think it's probably a collaborative effort between the film's producers and the studio who've either bought the film to release it or the people who are releasing the film. So you'd probably find it's in the marketing side of filmmaking. But I would like to think the directors would have a say. And in my experience, they do. So I'm often baffled. Like, I remember watching the trailer, it's kind of a few years ago, and I was so mad. And because he's one of my favourite filmmakers, Alexander Payne's film, The Descendants. And it takes us, that film takes a certain perspective and for about the first 40 minutes and then hits you with a real twist. And the twist is in the trailer. And I'm like an idiot. I watched the trailer before I saw the film and I was so annoyed. I didn't watch another trailer for about 2 years. So you would think someone like Alexander Payne would have a say in that, though. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is there, to be honest with you.
This is a kind of an odd one. Pat, now, because there seems to be confusion about this. Was the Bond film delayed or can I watch it somewhere online?
Oh, gosh, no, you can't. No, that will be... I would be amazed if that was ever released online. That's been delayed to April. Do you remember when they shut that down in March, that said they weren't releasing it last April until November, and we thought they were crazy, and what a long time that was. And now it's going to be a year after the original release, which is the new scheduled date. But I don't see Bond opening anything other than cinemas. They're always one of the biggest films of the year. Frankly, they cost a fortune to make. An absolute fortune. I mean, they're usually multi-locations and lots of stunt and action work, which is the most expensive kind of filmmaking. So, yeah, you won't be streaming that for a tenner online. That would be a cinema experience, I think, if Bond has anything to do with it.
I assume they can't delay it indefinitely because they must be losing money on a massive investment.
Yeah, I mean, they've already lost a massive amount of money because the marketing spend on a film and the advertising spend would nearly be as costly as the film itself. It's usually about the cost of making the film itself. And they only pulled the movie about 3 or 4 weeks before it was due to be released back in March, April, I think. And the thing about a film like Bond as well, you'd have all sorts of promotional partners. You'd have like, here's the coffee Bond drinks, here's the car he drives, here's his favourite beer, you know, and those ads would have all been made and spent on. So, you know, not only the film company themselves, but their promotional partners would have all had to move all that sort of stuff. So it's a very big decision to move around a big film like that, especially at short notice.
Yeah, whatever film, whatever phone he has in the film will be out of date by the time the film comes out.
It's just mad.
Change so quickly. Anyway, Jean, let's move on to our second wine of the day. Tell us all about it.
Absolutely. And don't forget, Esther, Bollinger Champagne. That's always been Bond's favourite. That's another product. I think they're
moving to... If it's good enough for James Bond, it's good enough for me.
I love a bit of Molly. Okay, our second wine comes from Ribera del Duero. And this is a region about 2 hours north of Madrid by car. There are four regional provinces, Burgos, Segovia, Soria and Valladolid. When I visited there the last time, which is in 2016, the head of the Consejo de Regulador said, Ribera del Duero, 9 months of winter and 3 months of hell, right? And that's how he describes it. It gets really hot there in summer, like you're talking 40 degrees, right? But the thing about Ribera del Duero that makes it so special is its altitude. It's really, I mean, you're up at about 3,500 feet above sea level, right? So it's, you know, I mean, it's a region where, like, they have quite a short growing season. The summer, intense summer heat. It gets very, very hot there. But at night, it cools down because of the high altitude. It's a huge, big plateau, you know, where the region is situated. The main grape here is Tempranillo, which they have different pseudonyms for in the area. They call it Tinto del Page, or sometimes it's known as Tinto Fino. But it's basically Tempranillo is the key red grape there. This particular wine, which is the 2018 Rubio Ribera del Duero Barrica, is $18.95, and this is available in O'Brien's. Now, this is to all intents and purposes a Vino Joven, a young wine. And the other thing about Ribera del Duero, this isn't your kind of Rioja region where you get all that vanilla and spice and wine that's been aged in American oak barrels and French oak. The thing about Ribera, and which is why I love it so much as a region, is that it's a much tighter wine. It's much more, you know, there's much more structure. There's more tannin coming through. It's a completely different animal to your sort of aged Spanish style. And that's what, for me, holds the great appeal. Now, this particular wine comes from a small province, Burgos, and it's a small family winery. Rubio is the name actually of the oldest vineyard that they own. So you know, that's what they call the wine. And the secret to the quality here is that the vines are about 50 years old, right? So you've old vines, and the older the vine, the more concentrated the fruit. Now, Wienerhoven basically means young wine. In other words, it hasn't been aged. But Barrica, they also have a Crianza in this range as well. But I actually decided to choose the Barrica to feature today because the wine has been aged for 6 months in new and used American and French oak barrels. It's got a kind of touch of almost a touch of carbonic maceration on the nose, which is that kind of lovely fruity, almost Beaujolais style. But then when you taste it in the palate, it's got a really tight structure and this gorgeous kind of very elegant fruit coming through, black fruit and a more firm tannin. I like this style. This is modern Spain. This is Ribera del Duero, 1895. Definitely worth the punt. And we're into autumn, the seasons of mists and mellow fruitfulness. And we're all making stews and slow cooked dinners. This is perfect to go with it. So it's a real winter wine. It's you know, and it definitely, you notice it's getting colder today. So this is one that'll definitely warm you up and worth a try.
Actually, people are disputing what is James Bond's favorite champagne. Dave says Bond was particularly fond of Tattinger 45. Somebody else says I thought Dom Perignon 69 was Bond's favorite bubbly. Now, Gene, would he have liked either of those, do you think?
Would have loved those. And in fact, I think the original Bond, the Sean Connery Bond, those wines featured in the very early Bonds. But then as Bond changed and matured over how many years? I mean, they've made the first Bond film in the early 60s, I think. So you're looking at nearly 60 years on. I know, again, part of the promotion, Bollinger always released these. When the films come out, they always have these special Bond cuvées. And in terms of product placement, particularly in the last 20 years, Bollinger has been featuring quite a lot in a lot of the Bond films. They probably did some kind of deal, the producers and whatever, you know, just as Aston Martin, as you know, is the car, you know. You'll find everybody, there's some financial incentive, but in modern Bond, Bollinger is the champagne that features quite a lot.
Right.
You don't hear of Tattinger anymore. It's all about Bollinger, you know. So again, I think a touch of product placement there in terms of the champagne house.
I was given a bottle of Chateau Muscar 2013. Should I drink it away or wait for a while?
Chateau Muzar, is it?
Yeah, Muzar, yes.
That's a beautiful Lebanese wine. And in fact, a friend of mine, Michael Karam, there's a film coming out. It's called, it's about, you know, Lebanon as a wine region, a region of war where wine is made. It's a documentary, which I think is coming out next week or the week after. But Chateau Muzar is probably one of Lebanon's best known wines. The very first vintage was 1982. Serge Hachar was the man who made it. He sadly died recently, well, in the last couple of years. Though that is a stunning, stunning wine. I love Muzar. Yes, beautiful wine. Enjoy it. Yeah.
Okay. On the subject of trailer, Simon Limerick says the worst trailer spoiler was The Day After Tomorrow. They should have made it out like it was going to be a delightful rom-com with Jake Gyllenhaal. And then, bam, I should be making these things. Yeah, I think you might get a few walkouts there. And a few people want to know, Esther, can you repeat the name of the website you said where you can see where films are streaming?
Yeah, that's justwatch.com. And you can, like any film ever made, like if you're looking for a screwball classic that you can't find on the usual channels. It's a really, really great resource, but just be sure to look under Ireland.
Right, okay, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Eternal Beauty. Here's a clip.
No, don't want to cause anyone any offence, but I bought my own presents this year. Just need the money now.
I'm not giving you that.
Well, you have to, so you've got no choice. I love it.
How are you feeling?
Fine. Good. You?
Funny. We're putting you on a different dose of medication.
Jane, you don't remember me?
No, I don't know you.
You're the most beautiful thing I've seen today.
Shut up.
What?
You shut up?
Would you like to spend more time with me?
Can I think about it? Thanks. Good riddance. There's no such thing as happiness. Only moments of not being depressed. I think I love you.
I definitely love you.
I think I love you. Right, okay. Well, it doesn't sound, you know, depressing particularly.
No, I suppose this is like if Mike Lee smoked something and then had a really weird fever dream that he turned into a film, you'd be kind of looking at something like this. Maybe.
Okay.
For a start, you've got Sally Hawkins as the main protagonist. I like what this is trying to do a lot, actually, because she has some fairly severe mental health problems. She's depressed from her schizophrenia, I suppose, is how I would put it. You know, she's been living with it for years, and she's, you know, trying to navigate life, really. And they're trying to do this by making it kind of a quirky comedy. So I really like what they're trying to set out to do here. But ultimately, I suppose they're really going for the unreliable narrator thing as well, which I usually really like in films. But unfortunately, almost the entire plot line is based around the, you know, what's real and what's not real, which, you know, because she is such an unstable protagonist, and it's kind of spelled out that she is from the outset. So if you're wondering what's real and what isn't real all the time, then it just, nothing feels real, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But she's Jane. She's a young woman who's exhausted from her struggles with schizophrenia, and she, you know, they've impacted on her physically, and she's spent from her illness. And that scene you heard mentioned at the start there, like she does have a tricky relationship with her family, to the extent that she shows up having bought her own presents at Christmas with receipts for them, which has actually played out quite funny. And let's face it, lads, who hasn't wanted to do that sometime in their lives?
Yes.
But she has this secret that she's keeping, though, and it's, she's been talking with this mystery man, and they seem to be making big plans, initially on the phone, eventually in the form of David Toulis. And he kind of, you know, he may or may not be part of her future. And it's kind of wacky. I like its wackiness, and it turns into something a bit more tender and emotional as it goes on. Never mean about the subject matter it's covering, but I just think just the unreliable narrator thing, if you actually make that your plot, then it's a problem, you know, and that's the problem I had with it. But Sally Hawkins, totally watchable as ever.
Of course,
I love her in
yeah.
everything. I love her in everything she does. And there's a good supporting cast here. Billie Piper is actually quite funny here as well.
Is she in it? All right, okay.
Yeah, she plays her sister, who may have problems of her own. And she has a smart gob on her, and she delivers some of the film's funniest lines. Like, she's actually quite a funny character. So the components are here. They just don't really come together.
Yeah, Billie Piper, I think, is, especially since I Hate Susie, is probably going to have a bit of a golden period now. And I should think deservedly so as well.
Absolutely. She's put the work in.
Yeah. Colin says he's already seen Eternal Beauty. David Thewlis is always brilliant in everything he does. And I suppose you, with Sally Hawkins and him, you can see there's a kind of a, you know, we're going for seriously quirky for all that. Jim has a question for you, Jean. Do the plants that are growing near the vineyard affect the flavour of the wine in the same way that it does for coffee beans?
Yeah, in some cases, you know, you can get, you know, sometimes, you know, for example, in Australia, there's lots of eucalyptus trees, and you will get that kind of eucalyptus character coming through in, say, Cabernet Sauvignon that's grown in Australia. And quite a lot of the producers now who are into the sort of biodynamic and organic farming, they actually deliberately plant certain types of plants that they know will actually, you know, be very good for the environment, but also then will create a kind of a little micro area, and the characteristics of some of the plants will come through in the wine. So yes, it actually does. Oh, and I've just got a text from the importer of Bollinger to say that actually Bollinger just supply the wine. They don't pay to be part of the film. So let's just clear that one up.
Okay, fair enough. Right, yes, we're corrected there. And finally, Esther, the most texted question of the day from anyone, everyone really, is they all want to know what's happening with the mice.
I thought I was going to get away with it. You're so bold. they seem to have, oh God, I'm going to jinx myself now. They seem to have gone.
Yeah, you
they
see.
They seem to have gone.
Public opinion, even mice are subject to that. They knew nobody wanted them there. Esther and Jean, thank you both. Very much pleasure as always.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.